Hello and welcome to this week's Guardian Film Show, here to protect and serve, to save you from turkeys in the dark and monsters at the multiplex. We will succeed and we will not be defeated. Join us for 20 minutes of lively debate and discussion. Bringing it on this week's show. We wanted a sequel to The Muppets, and now we've got Muppets Most Wanted, as Kermit faces off against a froggy doppelganger. And the plight of the backing singer is shouted from the rooftops in Oscar-winning documentary 20 Feet from Stardom. But we start with Captain America, the Winter Soldier, Marvel's latest weapon in the war against rival superhero movies. Our Second World War hunk returns, and this time he's battling a mysterious Cold War warrior and a massive load of Nazis. The Guardian's Paul McInnes went down to meet the film's stars, Chris Evans and Samuel L. Jackson, and to flirt mercilessly with Scarlett Johansson.
Coming up on the drop zone, Cap.
You do anything fun Saturday night?
Well, all the guys in my barbershop quartet are dead, so... No, not really.
You know, if you ask Kristen out from statistics, she'd probably say yes.
That's why I don't ask.
Too shy or too scared?
Too busy! Is he wearing a parachute?
No. No, he wasn't.
You are Captain America.
Yep.
You are the Black Widow. You are idealistic. You are cynical. Mm-hmm. You are earnest. You are sarcastic. You are massive. You are tiny. You are very good at punching, and you are very good at kicking. Mm. Now, I think, bit of a fit. Why don't you two get it together?
Oh, I see. You've got like a Lego situation going on there.
Lego, like the building blocks.
Yeah. Like the building blocks.
Yeah.
Why don't we get it together?
Yeah, go on.
Well, you're trying to force us to get together?
Not right now. That would be creepy. I mean, in the film, like, build a relationship.
These aren't things that you can force. You know, you need time to build this kind of a thing.
I see.
And these, you know this. You know this. We talked about this before. We've never met before. But
honestly, as if that needed pointing out.
These two characters are, they could never involve, be, like, exist in a romantic way, I think, because I think in some ways, as all of those things that you pointed out are, you know, opposites. That's for sure. But they're also kind of almost too similar in a weird way. You know, I think they are on a similar kind of journey, and they're certainly in a similar part of their life. I mean, at the end of this film, they're both having a kind of a crisis of identity, which I've heard is not the best place to start a relationship from.
I'm here to ask a favor. I want you to call for a vote. Project Insight has to be delayed.
Nick? It's not a favor, that's a subcommittee hearing. A long one.
Could be nothing. Probably is nothing. I just need time to make sure it's nothing.
Fine. But you gotta get Iron Man to stop by my niece's birthday party.
Thank you, sir.
And not just a flyby. He's gotta mingle.
So, Nick Fury, it's his responsibility to make sure all these superheroes kind of keep the world safe.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that that's his responsibility. It's his desire that they do that. And there's something about him or something in his personality that allows him to persuade them to do things that I don't think a lot of people could get them to do.
And could you expand on what techniques he might possess?
I have no idea.
I see.
He uses deception. He uses lies. Panders to their vanities, depending upon which one we're talking about. He's pretty much figured out a way to get people to do what he needs them to do.
Does he ever get people like small baskets of muffins?
I doubt that.
Cut off one of our heads and two more will grow in its place, and they will look like the heads of Peter Bradshaw and Andrew Pulver. Peter, we thought that Fifth Estate was the official Guardian anti-surveillance film.
Yes.
And yet, along comes Captain America.
Along comes Captain America, and suddenly, along with his muscles, he's grown a conscience, a massive liberal Edward Snowden-style conscience. It is quite interesting. I mean, it's quite unexpected, this conspiracy thriller vibe, but it's quite interesting to see it kind of dart out like this. Poor old Chris Evans, that kind of very stupid-looking face, his brow furrowed with concern about the surveillance complex here at the heart of America. It's quite interesting. It makes zero difference to to the actual way the film plays out. It could be you could slot it in or take it out. Basically, in terms of the action and the drama, really, it doesn't make that much difference. But it's very lively and ingenious while it's all happening, I must say. So I did quite enjoy Captain America.
What about you, Andrew? I thought there were some great car chases in this, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, you would kind of expect that. This is what the sort of whole type of filmmaking is all about. I mean, I'm going to strike a slightly dissenting note in that I actually find the conspiracy thriller element of it a little cynical in that Marvel, I think, announced beforehand they were going to do make this a conspiracy thriller type of thing. But I just think you can't really bolt that kind of thing on. I personally don't really buy it. And in general, I find the more serious and pompous a superhero film is, the less I like it. I like the ones that are funny and kind of cartoony and are all about the look.
But isn't it good to have the vegetables of this surveillance plot in there, as well as the kind of, muscular action figure sequences as well, the meat of it? I mean, I thought, for kids, for 12-year-olds who are going to go and see this, isn't it going to make them also think about their Facebook profile? Isn't that good?
Well, there's sort of something in saying there's a context to all this that most, obviously, the sort of average superhero film doesn't have particularly high IQ at all, and this one is at least trying. But for me, most superhero films have this sort of kind of nameless conspiracy thing going on in the background anyway. Some guy who's got tentacles all over the universe and is affecting things, and that's all in all the Spider-Man films, all the Batman films have all got that as a sort of backdrop, perhaps not as specifically modelled on what we might think about the Bush era America, because this is obviously trying to make those references.
It is very difficult to sell superheroes in this liberal context, because they are reactionary figures, superheroes. They are vigilantes who care nothing for democratic accountability. They are very right wing, at least potentially. But I know what you mean. It's sort of cynical, but no more cynical than anything else. There's an element of absurdity and whimsy in a way in it. But I didn't take against it. But then I didn't really buy it either.
Captain America there. And from one dreadful threat to world peace to another, Ricky Gervais, who's teamed up with a frog to try and steal the crown jewels in Muppets Most Wanted. The Guardian's Stuart Heritage went down to meet the film's cast and to flirt mercilessly with Miss Piggy.
Flawlessly executed. Bravo.
What did you expect from world's most dangerous frog and number one criminal, number two?
Yeah, I know. You're number one, I'm number two. I think you mentioned that before.
So you're Ricky Gervais, actor,
yeah,
who plays a man called Dominic.
Exactly.
But you are a frog called Constantine, and you play a frog called Constantine.
Good point.
How does
Very
that work?
Good point.
Is that like a sort of a...
it's not a
Larry
stretch,
David
is it?
Sort of.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, that's a very well, you answer the question.
That is exactly right. There was no question. You just said you are this. This is Ricky. You play Dominic. I am Constantine. I play Frog. Yes, you are right.
You have a double in this film, Kermit.
I do. I believe they call it a doppelganger. Although I have to tell you, I do not see the resemblance at all. I do not understand why people think all frogs look alike.
Well, you're both green.
We are both green. That's true. But I mean, that's where the resemblance
ends. You both have webbed feet. You both have that silly collar around your neck.
The feet, the collar. Yes. Well, that's true. That's all true. maybe you're right.
The world's most dangerous criminal has a lot in common with the world's most famous frog.
It's not easy being mean.
You're Russian, right?
No, I'm taking my time.
What is this, a toy?
This is my car. It is illegal now for its massive size.
Not to mention my badge is bigger.
This is my travel badge. Here's my real badge.
You must have been looking at the wrong badge.
Constantine, the world's most dangerous frog, has escaped.
Check this out.
Oh, look, it's Kermit.
I remember as a kid watching it with my dad and in the 70s, and he and I would both laugh heartily at this thing, and I often thought it was weird that he was laughing as well as I was laughing. And now time's moved forward, and I am now the dad, and I'm with my daughter who is 6 and 7, we're both laughing. And I think I just wanted to make that happen again with them, create this sense of that sense of humour, that kind of the joke-telling musicality of it. I just love that about it.
Tonight, we steal the painting. And then we'll have all we need to steal the unstealable, the crown jewels of England. Ensuring that my name goes down in history as greatest thief of all time.
You mean our names, right?
Of course. My name first, then spacebar, 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 your name.
Andrew, there's a lot of quite self-conscious, tongue-in-cheek references to disappointing sequels in this film. Was this a disappointing sequel?
Yeah, I think we'd have to say in the end it probably was a little bit disappointing. I mean, the scene you refer to is this opening musical number where they do sort of get in their sort of explanation very early that this might not be as good or as well liked as the first one, and it has actually proved that way. I mean, we got the figures through yesterday about the US box office, which was apparently very disappointing. Maybe we've just got Muppet fatigue very quickly. Everybody loved the first film. And I suppose the first film sort of bought into the idea of loving something that you liked a long time ago, coming back to life. And that's perhaps why it struck such a big chord. Well, this one doesn't really do that at all. It's much more what you might call a by-the-numbers sort of international romp thing. The sort of thing that people did in the 70s with franchise movies when they sort of ran out of ideas, you know, just get Burt Reynolds and stick him in a car and loads of people sort of turn up for a quick sort of high. And that's kind of what happens here, I think. And they've obviously cooked up a plot, which doesn't make a huge amount of sense, I don't think. But I suppose that's not a massive problem for the Muppets. But I suppose it just wasn't that involving or funny, I suppose. Mm.
Oh, I mean, the lack of Jason Segel seems a big hole here.
Yeah, I think what it was is all those cameos, I think, is just absurd. I mean, I think what happened was that you had all these people who thought the Muppets were great and are thrilled to be involved. And so you just, it was everywhere you looked, there was another famous person. I sometimes wonder if they all individually knew quite how many other famous people were going to be involved. I suspect they didn't quite. I wonder if Sean Coombs really did know that he was just going to be very, 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 very almost invisible in this blizzard of cameos.
Well, it's like a party, isn't it? You invite people and then they all come.
They all come, exactly.
Like, oh my God.
Yes. And I thought that there was a kind of loss of nerve in a way. And however big a fan I am of Ricky Gervais, which I am, I think he's not hugely successful in an acting role when he's not the centre of attention. When, if it's not about him and his own elaborate comedy of irony and embarrassment, if he just has to play the bad guy, I don't think he's terribly good. Ty Burrell is better in a way, but playing it straight. So I don't want to see it down on this movie because there's lots of fun in it. I laughed a lot in it, but it's just it's something about it. It didn't take flight because they didn't have the courage of their convictions and make it about the Muppets. Mm. It was just all about Tina Fey and, you know, Hugh Bonneville and Tom Hollander and all the thousands of famous people are in it. And it didn't quite take off.
We're doing a sequel. We're back by popular demand. Come on, everybody, strike up the band.
We're doing a sequel. That's what quite as good.
The Muppets there, singing for their supper and bringing home the bacon. And the music doesn't stop as we move into our final film, Morgan Neville's hymn to the unsung heroes behind all your favourite top hits.
Being with Lisa is really inspiring because she's a monster musician. She just doesn't really talk about it. I mean, she's as good as it gets.
20 Feet from Stardom shines a spotlight on the women usually consigned to the shadows. Women like Darlene Love, Tata Vega, Judith Hill and Lisa Fisher. What do they dooby-do? Well, they provide backup to the likes of Sting, The Rolling Stones and Led Zepp. Peter, we voted Act of Killing the best film of last year and indeed the top film of the Guardians Film Awards. Yes. And this... This won the documentary Oscar over it.
It did.
Is it a worthy winner?
I really enjoyed it. I was sort of, my heart was kind of won by it. I thought it was a really good idea. It's a sort of simple idea that was has been there all along. I can't believe that nobody's sort of done it before, really. But I must say, I found it very ingenuous and likeable movie. I kind of loved the music they were giving us. I loved the Blossoms and Darlene Love, who I knew nothing about before I started to watch this. And I kind of loved it. And I thought it was a real eye-opener as to how these people were treated in the American music industry. They needed them. They needed their passion and their professionalism. But they needed them to be a kind of servant class, really. And some of them were happy enough to be subservient, effectively. They were happy in that role. Some of them weren't. All of them wanted to be acknowledged and appreciated, and some of them weren't. And they people like Phil Spector outrageously pinched their stuff and just had a rather larcenous approach, really, to their work. But this film showed you what it was like, and it showed you the pathos and pain of trying to break out of being a backing singer and realizing the dangers involved in taking the regular paycheck of being a backing singer and realizing you've stereotyped yourself as a backing singer and you'll never be a star.
I thought the interesting thing was what it didn't show, because there were some examples of backing singers that alluded to who become frontmen, like Luther Vandross. There's a great quote where somebody says he was sweating like a pig and singing like an angel.
Yes.
Because he's in the back, he was a bit chubbier when he was backing singing.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, but you never heard from him about how he made that leap. And then you did sort of wonder, I sort of wondered why some of these people didn't make the leap. And it was because they didn't have the kind of star quality that you needed to be a front person.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And it didn't really sort of, it shied away from saying that, I thought.
Well, I thought there was a very strong strain of melancholy in the film that came out very well, where there was with quite a few of them that they had come up against the fact that they were not going to make it. One or two of them had sort of slightly dark conspiracy theories about why that was happening. Others did realise that, you know, that perhaps they just didn't want it enough, or they didn't have the spark or whatever it was. But I enjoyed the film as well. And I know obviously we as Guardian journalists want to sort of somehow hate it because it beat Act of Killing. I think I can see why it won, and not for any cynical reason, really. I think music, and particularly experiences of sort of Black Americans, means a lot in America, and I think it's Americans voting about something that's part of their social history in a big way, and I can see why they responded to it. It wasn't just a sort of cheesy, soft film, really.
It's quite cheesy, but it didn't.
It wasn't an investigative movie or forensic or skeptical in any way. I mean, basically, it was celebratory. But I think it had some interesting things to say, especially about the Brit invasion, the 70s Brit invasion of Led Zepp and Joe Cocker, and especially the Rolling Stones, who were the first people to use these voices and to let them rip in a way that they hadn't been allowed to before. And again, I'm showing my ignorance here of pop culture and pop music, but I hadn't really known about that before.
Well, I am a sister who can sing.
Yes.
I am a sister who can sing. Oh, but if I die and my soul be lost, nobody's fault but mine.
Rape, murder, it's just a shot away, it's just a shot away. Which seems a good point for us to cut on this week's show. My thanks to the Catherinettes, Peter Bradshaw and Andrew Pulver, and to you for watching. Our very own Sting, Sam Brooks, is back in front of the mic next week. Hope you can join the chorus then.